Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and I have a very special show for you today on the Voices of Courage here. You know, I recently had a wonderful experience. I was able to meet RFK Jr. In person here in the Phoenix area. And I sat down and got to know him a little bit and got to meet his son, Finn, and also met my guest today at the home. And so I thought it would be really appropriate to have Dick Russell on our show today and be able to talk about the real RFK Jr. I think a lot of times people get confused with what he's up to, who he is. You know, there's a lot of media hype around him. A lot of it's not great if you listen to mainstream media. But when you take a little deeper dive into the man, his character, what he's accomplished over the years, how much he's supported this world in environmentally, and that, you know, and of course now with the Secretary of HHS, I think it is, and he's quite a man, and he's quite a brilliant man, and to meet him in person and to spend quite a bit of time with him was a pleasure. So I thought I'd share some of that with you today so that you could really get to know my point of view and also the author of his book, The Real RFK Jr., Dick Russell. And I think you're going to appreciate this show because I think it's going to give you a perspective and a point of view that you don't get from necessarily the mainstream media, but you will get here. Because, you know, my show is dedicated to truth, courage, and wisdom. And I only bring people on this show that have those qualities and that are willing to really make a difference in the world, right? Because, you know, all of us need to hear a little wisdom now and then, right? I think if you need more information, just Google it, right? I mean, or now use AI. You can get all the information you need. But real wisdom comes through experience, from people that have bridged great challenges in their life and had the courage to overcome great obstacles. And that definitely meets RFK Jr. and also applies to my guest, Dick Russell. So I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, Dick will be right here with us.
Do you suffer in pain? Are you stiff, tense, or less active than before? Introducing the EasyWell Remedy Massage System that combines the incredible effects of vibrational therapy, targeted deep tissue shiatsu massage, plus soothing infrared heat. A triple fusion of therapeutic experiences. Full body vibrational therapy increases blood circulation and reduces inflammation. Look at these beads moving from the powerful vibrational motors.
It's like 1,000 little fingers just vibrating my body from head to toe.
Infrared heat penetrates deep to reduce pain, soothe, and relax.
Remedy gets in there and helps deal with the source of the pain, so you feel much better.
The Ultra Shiatsu Pillow with 6 infrared heated nodes mimics a professional massage. Plus, it's detachable for deep relief anywhere you need it.
It's just something that you're gonna have to feel for yourself.
Experience the true remedy for your pain and stiffness. Call now.
If you've been injured in an accident that's not your fault and you don't have an attorney, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to tell you what your case is potentially worth. Hello, I'm Gina, along with spokesperson Rob. Rob, tell the folks at home who should be calling right now.
Well, just like you said, Gina, anyone who's been injured in an accident that was not your fault, you don't have an attorney, give us a call right now, and we're going to let you know what your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Rob. So what kind of calls have we been seeing today?
Well, Gina, we're getting calls from all types of accidents today. Work accidents, slip and falls, truck accidents, and most commonly, car accidents. So if you were injured in an accident that was not your fault, you don't have an attorney, take that first step, pick up that phone, and give us a call. We're going to answer your questions, and we'll let you know how much money you can get for your accident.
Thanks, Rob. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Go ahead. Don't hesitate. Take that first step and call now.
Call 800-455-2790. Have you ever felt leg pain, restlessness, cramps, tingling, swelling, numbness, itchiness, or coldness? Then you need the new, clinically proven Legsercise Pro, the natural circulation booster that uses continuous automatic leg movement to soothe pain and promote healthy circulation the natural drug-free way.
After using Legsercise for a week, I felt like I wanted to go for a walk again without pain like I used to.
Legsercise Pro's patented walking simulator propulsion technology moves your feet back and forth along its concave track, creating constant movement and flex at both the knee and ankle joints. It's like having a physical therapist right in your own home.
It's helped with the swelling and the pain. The tingling feeling is gone.
Call right now and order your very own Legsercise Pro, the clinically proven automatic leg mover that soothes pain and naturally promotes healthy circulation. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Ken D. Foster, and I'm here with Dick Russell. And Dick, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much, Ken. Good to be with you today.
You know, for those of you that don't know Dick, he's a multifaceted investigative journalist, author, environmental activist, and historian whose work spans enthralling explorations of political controversy, presidential assassination, marine conservation, and the lives of high-profile figures. Over the past five decades, he has authored 15 or more books, ranging from deeply researched accounts of the assassination of John F. Kennedy to sweeping natural history narratives such as The Eye of the Whale, Epic Passage from Baja to Siberia, and most recently, The Real RFK, Trials of a True Warrior, a definitive biography of Robert Kennedy Jr., released in 2023. You know, Dick, you've written a lot. You've done a lot. You've got a lot of passion. You're kind of ageless and timeless right now. What fuels you? What fuels you? How do you wake up in the morning going, yeah, let's write about this subject?
Well, I've written about a lot of different subjects in my life, and all of them have been basically, as you mentioned, thank you, passion projects. I've been very blessed that I've been able to write about things that I really am deeply concerned about, like the environment. And then that's how I actually got to know Bobby Kennedy Jr. We can talk about that. But, to a memoir about the difficulties I went through with my son, who was diagnosed with a mental illness when he was 17, and looking for alternatives, adjuncts to the psychiatric medication that he hated taking. And that's called My Mysterious Son, A Life-Changing Passage Between Schizophrenia and Shamanism. I've done a biography of James Hillman, the great depth psychologist who studied with Jung. And as you say, three books on the Kennedy assassination, which I became impassioned about back when I was a young guy. And I've spent a long time. I've interviewed some very, very bad characters in the course of it. And I think I've written several books and have another one coming out with Rob Reiner based on the podcast series that I did with him called Who Killed JFK.
I'm looking forward to that book. And, I'm really curious about your son. How's your son doing these days? How's he doing?
He's doing really, really well. And what we've been through together as a family, my ex-wife and Franklin and I went to Burkina Faso in West Africa almost 10 years ago now for a healing with a wonderful guy, a shaman actually named Melodoma Somme. And so he's still taking some medication, but he's really just doing, I couldn't be happier with how he's doing.
Well, I have a belief that God does things for us, not to us. And, we take those challenges and we do our best to turn them around, to learn, to grow, to evolve ourselves, our families. And, my hat's off to your son. I'm so glad that he's got you to take him to a shaman. I took my wife to a shaman once and she healed a major issue in her life through this. So, I think being open and being investigating and going down new paths is key to transitioning the greatest challenges in our lives.
I totally am with you all the way on that. And I think, you know, we've got to go through things in our lives in order to grow as human beings and connect. I mean, through my son, I was really able to connect more to other worlds myself, because that's where he lives a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so that was a great gift to me from him. And, you know, I think and that's in RFK Jr., when I wrote the biography of him. And before that, I mean, what I saw and felt in him was the same kind of passion that I had for protecting species and you know, working really hard to do everything we could to make a change in the world for the better.
For the better. You know, I think the life is chiefly service. And when we step into that, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'd say miracles, magic, synchronicity start showing up, the people, places, and things that will help us to manifest those dreams, whether it's writing about the real RFK Jr. or, you know, anything else. That seems to be the case. When we become courageous.
I would say that that's very true. And, you know, as I say, I've been blessed in my life to follow the threads that have been presented to me, you know, to take a path. We have choices, you know, we have free will. And I think so many times I've been really lucky and able, willing, I guess, to follow these threads that lead into often unknown territory. And, but that's been, I think what makes life interesting and worthwhile, and I've just been very very lucky to be able to do it.
You know, it's interesting. You shifted from conventional journalism into a deep investigative book writing, right?
Yes.
And you know, I what did you shift inside to go to that? What happened? What was the catalyst for that? I'm curious.
Well, when I was young, which is, you know, 50 some years ago now, I was a sports writer. I was lucky very young, and I got a job with Sports Illustrated magazine when I was 20 years old as a summer intern, went back full time. But you know, my life had broadened, I guess you'd say. You know, I'd suddenly woken up. I was a Kansas kid, but I woke up that there was something going on in the country. Besides sports, you know, there was a civil rights movement and a Vietnam War, and friends were hippies, and you know, something was going on that I felt I had to look into. And so I quit Sports Illustrated after just 7 months. And my father thought I was, my family thought I was crazy. My brother did, you know, you were at the top already. But I knew somehow it was going to kill my soul. I had to do something else with life. I didn't know what it was. And I just took off with a backpack and a portable typewriter and traveled for a year and a half all over the world.
Yeah. Wow. I know that journey. I was at the top of the financial service business and I quit. I said, nope, can't do it anymore. I gotta go pursue my dream, which I did. And that was about 30 years ago. Let's talk about the real RFK. I've got your book sitting on my desk, but I bet you we could put that right on the screen. And this is the book that you've written, and I now have an autographed copy from you. Thank you for that. Why the real RFK Jr.? What was like, okay, let me write about RFK. I know you've written about the assassinations, but why this book?
Well, it has a long history in that my friendship developed with Bobby over the years, and I got to know him first through environmental causes. I was doing a book on the gray whales, which I ended up following their migration all the way to Russia. And at the time, Bobby was very involved in trying to save this lagoon in Mexico, in Baja California, where the whales went every year to have their young.
And what lagoon was that? Do you remember?
San Ignacio Lagoon.
Oh my gosh, I've taken several trips down there, and we've gone with the whales, and been with them, and you know, the first trip that I went out there with them, they got in these little fishing boats, and they took us out, and the driver's praying, and I'm thinking, oh man, he's praying so we don't get killed probably. And I asked him, why are you praying? He says, I'm praying so we don't hit the whales. Yeah, you know, but what an experience it was. San Ignacio Bay is so beautiful. Yeah, so
it really is. I mean, I went there to do a story on this salt works that Mitsubishi and the Mexican government were trying to put in there. And
right.
just fell in love with these animals. They would come up to us in the wild and the mothers would introduce their babies.
Yes. Yeah. That, and their eyes, those magenta colored eyes, it looks like you're looking into the eyes of God.
It's absolutely true. And I think in a way you are, you know, and,
I think so.
That just only began happening since the early 1970s. They never used to come up to people. They were called the devilfish by the whalers. They used to overturn whaling boats.
Oh,
so yeah, it's an amazing experience. And
yeah.
So that's where I met Bobby and interviewed him. And then we also had a passion about a fish, the Atlantic striped bass. We were both bass fishermen, and he in the Hudson River and I on Martha's Vineyard, and the fish were disappearing. And so I ended up a leader of the coastal campaign to try to curtail the overfishing practices and bring them back. And we were successful in doing that. And I wrote a chapter about Bobby in that book. And we went out seining on the Hudson River. And so I'm saying by that we became good friends and worked together on a number of projects over the years, and from politics to he wrote the introduction to a book I did on climate change back in 2015, something like that. And then, you know, I wasn't ever really intending to be his biographer, but what happened was during the pandemic, he'd already been involved in this movement for some years to listening to these mothers come up to him and talk about their kids who had been affected. They had terrible autism and didn't know why. And so we can get to some of that in a minute, but by the time of the pandemic, Bobby was really being vilified by the big media as this conspiracy theorist, this nut who, you know, was trying to tell us we shouldn't get vaccines, which is, by the way, not true. He never said we should never take vaccines, but he did have his doubts about the COVID vaccine and justifiably so. And I was really outraged at what was happening to him. So before he announced that he was going to run for president, we had the same publisher, Skyhorse in New York, that had published some of his books and a number of mine. And so they'd talked about, doing a biography. And so Bobby said, yeah, let's do it. So it was authorized by him. He didn't write it. And we sat down for interviews on, you know, almost every week, certainly every couple of weeks, every time I'd finish a chapter. And so he was involved in the project. And I really discovered about him in the course of that something his father talked about when he was alive before he was assassinated, which was moral courage. And I observed this firsthand with him, environmental causes, and eventually with the whole COVID situation.
Well, I got to take a break, but you know, some of my audience might not be familiar with moral courage. And I want to take a little deep dive into that. So we'll be right back, and we're going to get to know the real RFK. And we're getting to know even more about the real Dick Russell. So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Good, Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'll be right back with my guest, Dick Russell. But I want to mention to you that if you're on our YouTube channel right now, go ahead and subscribe to YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere, you may want to replay this video anyway. And you can go to youtube.com/@thecouragenetwork to find our channel there on YouTube, youtube.com/@thecouragenetwork to see our shows, and I think, me more importantly, to pass these shows on to people that you care about and love. All right, Dick. Moral courage. How do we define that?
I'm going to read a brief quote from his father, which Robert Kennedy said in June of 1966 in a speech. And it says, "Few are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change." I love that quote. And of course, I think it defined his father in the sense of, you know, his entering the presidential race, challenging the powers that be in 1968 and paying the terrible price for it with his own life. I think he would have become president of the United States. And he was somebody who had discovered that moral courage after his brother died and was killed, because in the agony of that, and even wondering if some of his, you know, efforts with the Cuban exiles might have had something to do with it. He read the Greeks, he read Camus, he really dove deep into and became a very spiritual man in a sense of that his he tried to pass along to and did to his children. And he knew whereof he spoke. And and then I think that Bobby Jr., I would say of all of the kids, there were 11 of them, has really sought to embody that and was the one since he was a young that was kind of the considered the one who would take up the mantle of the Kennedy family and display that moral courage in different ways. And he never wanted to run for office. He had many, many opportunities over the years when he was younger. And, you know, he could have been governor of New York. He could have been a senator. And he just wanted to, he was raising his kids and he wanted to stay, you know, in doing what he loved most, which was protecting the environment after a very rough period in his life, which we should talk about too.
Well, I know they, he had the heroin addiction going on. He had the, tough things going on early in his life and, you know, going to law school and trying to figure out who he was and what he was about. But talking about moral courage, I mean, here's a man that's been sober now 44 years. You don't do that unless you got a lot of courage to go through a lot of your own issues to be able to stay that way.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine what it was like for him. I mean, he was 14 years old when his father was assassinated following his uncle's assassination a few, 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
And he was a mess. You know, he was deeply traumatized by this. He was just a kid, didn't get along that well with his mother at the time. Ended up, just taking off. He ended up traveling. I read about this in the book where he went on the road and he just hitchhiked across the country and then ended up on riding freight trains with the bums and never telling them who he was even. Going through an awful lot to finally get home and hear his mother say, he called her up, can I come see you? And she said, get a job. So that relationship, by the way, improved a lot over the years, but it was tough love, as he said. And so he became an addict. He was a heroin addict for a long, long time and very well, high functioning while he did it. So he was able to go to college at Harvard and, get a law school, a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, I could relate to that. As I, you know, told you and Bobby, you know, I stepped into the doors of AA at March 17th, 1992. And, you know, talk about, you know, I know what it takes to stay sober. I know what it takes, and I know what you have to go through to be there. So here's a man that's been able to stay on that path and stay connected to himself without trying to fix it or fade it or move away from who he is. So that's, to me, is a lot of moral courage. And as we talked, you know, that the vaccine, it's interesting with the vaccine thing. Yeah, he never said, I don't want, he's always said, I'm not anti-vax. He's always said, you know, I'm pro-science. And, you know, but I don't think a lot of people get that. They really think it's an either or, black and white. Well, you know, if you turn down the COVID vaccine, you're turning them all down. Or if you don't want, you know, people to get MMR, you want, then there's something wrong with you here. I mean, what'd you find out about that when you talked to him?
Well, yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time on it. And as he has said, he said, they call me anti-vax. He said, I'm trying to get mercury out of fish. He said, nobody calls me anti-fish and nobody calls me anti-energy because I'm fighting for good alternatives to fossil fuels. But, you know, he was labeled this early on by the media. And it was really, you know, because he was willing to take on the big pharmaceutical companies and discover, too, that there was collusion between federal agencies like the Centers for Disease Control and the FDA and with these big companies. And they were covering up the impacts of what they were doing. And in some cases, that meant that the vaccines weren't adequately safety tested. So that's what he was calling for. He said, you know, we got to test these COVID vaccines and all vaccines against a placebo. And he could never get Anthony Fauci to do it. So anyway.
I'm glad he wrote the book because it really revealed, the Fauci. And were you part of that? You were part of that project, right?
I'm not listed with the book, and I didn't I didn't do any writing on the book, but I was there to talk to him about it as he went through it.
Because that book, I think, changed a lot of people's attitudes and understanding about the system and how corrupt it was and that type of thing. So, and now he's head of this. He's head of the secretary. Of the is it HHS? Is that, am I getting that right?
Yeah, Health and Human Services.
Yeah, HHS.
Did
he ever want that? I'm curious.
Well, it's an interesting story because, you know, he decided, I remember I was with him when I don't know if it was the moment he made the decision to run for president, but he started out, he was a Democrat, right? And he was, that he was going to challenge Joe Biden. And of course, then he was just aced out of the picture. The Democratic Party wouldn't let him into the primaries. But he said, you know, I don't really necessarily want to do this like his father before him, but I feel like, there's nobody, the country is just so divided and I can really help bring it together.
Yeah.
And so that's what he set out to do. And then he became an independent, right? And then suddenly, you know, shocked the world by joining forces with Donald Trump during the election campaign. And, you know, a lot of people, including myself, you know, had issues with that. Like, how could you possibly go that far? But, you know, he'd known Donald Trump for a long time. Trump had asked him to be on a vaccine commission back in 2016 when he was running for president. And then that didn't come to the fore because Big Pharma kind of told Trump, you can't do that. And at the time, Trump listened to them. But, I think Donald Trump sincerely he was concerned about public health, especially for our kids. And so he went ahead and named Robert Kennedy Jr. to run Health and Human Services, which I personally think he's done a pretty amazing job with. He's been lambasted, as usual, in the big media. But, you know, especially on the food arena and others, he's really doing a lot for our future. And at a time when 50-some percent of our people have a chronic disease.
Yeah, it's unheard of. It's unprecedented in the history of this nation. You know, I mean, maybe there's some other nation out there that's had this kind of chronic issues. But, you know, we know it's through the processed foods. We know it's through a lot of, you know, from my point of view, I think, yeah, FUBO, you know, fake science is, you know, is rampant in some of our industries, you know, pharmaceutical industries, vaccine, well, not vaccine, I mean, food industries, pharmaceuticals, just it's kind of rampant. And, you know, and it's from my point of view, thank God Bobby's there. Thank God we got somebody that really that cares, that maybe not has all the answers, but cares and is truly trying to make a difference.
Well, he's changing the consciousness about food.
Yeah.
You know, getting these processed foods out of the school lunches in various states. And states have stepped up. You know, West Virginia is suing the big companies for to get the food dyes that are in these processed foods out of them. And it's starting to work. Now there's a new organization, though, that I just read about, which they're calling AFIT, the Americans for Ingredient Transparency. But it's funded and founded by these big food companies in General Motors. I'm General, you know,
Mills, General Mills,
General Mills, Kraft and Heinz. And, you know, so they're going to fight him all the way on this.
Yeah, they're going to fight him all the way. Yeah, well, and, you know, I think of our farms. I mean, I think of our, you know, cattle. I mean, you know, some of the, you know, the way the, you know, the cattle, the pigs, the chickens, you know, what they're sticking into them. Yeah. You know, and what we're eating, and you know, it's a food system that's not sustainable. That's really hurting a lot of us. You know, for me, I use AI to go to the store, and if I can't read, you know, if I don't understand what the chemical is in the food, I just ask AI, tell me what about this chemical and what are the harms that it'll cause me in my body. And then I can make a choice. But right now, you know, that's a lot of work. I mean, you got some of these processed foods that have 20, 30 ingredients in them. And, you know, of course, for me, that's a red flag instantly. I'm like, probably not going to put that in my body. But a lot of people don't know that. It's taken me years to learn about food in our food system. And I think the government has an obligation to help the citizens, to protect the citizens from these large companies that are just really making profit at the expense of our health.
Absolutely. And now, you know, he's in charge. So the guy who's running the Food and Drug Administration, which is over time become a very corrupt agency. I mean, you know, basically cutting deals with industry everywhere they could. But that's no longer the case. They've got a guy who's close to Bobby, Marty McCary. And I heard him speak at a big MAHA rally in Washington not too long ago. And boy, he was on the same page, you know, that we got to get healthier. And because, I mean, look at the obesity epidemic. It's just criminal. What we're feeding our kids and, you know, 50, some, I don't know, half of them can't even go and serve in the military even if they want to, because they're too fat.
Yeah. They're too fat or, you know, there's the other side of that. They're too thin.
That's true too. Yeah.
Yeah. You got both sides of that. You know, these processed foods, you know, impact people in a lot of different ways. And we got to clean that up. So I'm glad he's there. Listen, I got to take a quick break, Dick. When I come back, I'd like to ask you, you know, what are two or three things that we don't know, the public maybe doesn't know about Robert Kennedy Jr. and that we should know? We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. If you just joined us, I'm here interviewing Dick Russell. He's written a book, The Real RFK Jr., and we're talking about Bobby Kennedy. Dick, what are some of the things that we don't know, the public probably doesn't know about Bobby, and maybe we should know about him?
Well, for sure, the stereotype of the media is that he's anti-science. You know, he's going to destroy our public health system because he doesn't listen to all these experts. But the fact is, I mean, he's very studied. I mean, I've watched it. He's been in this fighting for healthier food and fighting for safe vaccines, you know, for a long, long time, more than 20 years, back to 2005. And he, you know, he came at this in a very, from a very personal perspective, because he suddenly had all these women coming up to him at his speeches he was giving about getting mercury out of power plants. And they said, would you please look at what may be happening to our kids because of a preservative called thimerosal, which did end up being taken out of vaccines to a large extent. And so he, you know, he suddenly discovered there was this huge woman came and camped on his doorstep. He didn't want to get into this. He had no desire to get into this particular arena. He wanted to stick with his environmental stuff, but which was, he was making great progress on. But, you know, he did because he was moved. You know, he was deeply touched by these women, mothers who were coming up to him, and he stuck with it. And he stuck with it despite being, you know, he used to write op-eds all the time, you know, for the New York Times and other places. All of a sudden he took on this subject and nobody would let him write an op-ed. They had a meeting with the New York Times, he and some of the women, and they didn't want to hear about this. And so he even faced tremendous difficulties with his own family, which are still going on. I mean, talking about the larger family, not his kids, you know, who have just turned against him in every way. I think that's certainly something people don't quite realize, the cost that he has paid in order to fight for what he believes in. And maybe we should talk for a minute about the assassination of his father, because, you know, he's fought on that level too, to try to get the truth out. He even went to visit Sirhan in prison.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that, of course, you know, brings me to, you know, when I came to visit him, I had some information to give him, you know, which I was able to pass along. You know, yeah, I've read, you know, I've read enough, and you've read, you know, written three books on JFK's assassination, and now, you know, we have the same thing going on with, you know, Bobby's dad, right? And, you know, most of them, I mean, the information's been there for a long time for us to see. It's like it's in plain sight what happened, and yet, you know, it's been so covered up everything's steeped in quote conspiracy theory that the real story hasn't got out to the mass media yet. And I've you know, when it comes out, it's gonna be another revelation of, you know, you know, we've got the wrong person.
Yeah, I mean, conspiracy theory was actually a phrase created by the CIA in 1967 to tarnish people who were going against the official version of the Warren Report. But, you know, that said, there are conspiracies. There are real conspiracies. And two of them have happened to the Kennedys, you know, who the JFK and his brother. And, Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy. Maybe people don't realize that. Right. He walked into that pantry. He was hypnotized, but that's a whole other matter to get into. And it's true. He didn't remember anything about it. He shot other people, but Robert Kennedy was killed by a guy standing behind him.
Yeah.
And Sirhan fired 13 bullets. There were 13 bullets found, I should say. He didn't fire them all. And,
His gun only held 8 bullets. So, yeah.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, that's been a huge cover up. And people think, well, he went into that pantry. He must have done what they said he did, but he actually didn't. And so when Bobby went to see him in prison, which, of course, his family was very opposed to, most of them, all but one, I think. And he spent 3 hours with him talking this. And he came away believing Sirhan and saying he could be alone.
Yeah.
After all these years of, you know, he wasn't an innocent man, but he also was not the killer.
Well, he would have been charged differently had the truth been known, and he would have been out of prison a long time ago. So he needs to be freed. I mean, here's a man that was set up, and you know, they always say the truth has set us free, but it does take a while to get there sometimes. And in this case, it's taken a while. So
it has.
I know that it's an important piece of RFK Jr.'s past. And, I'm curious about one thing about RFK, too. In the book, The Real RFK Jr., which, by the way, my audience, I want to mention to my audience here, you can get this book on Amazon. You can get it on Audible, and I hope you'll go and read it and really find out the truth for yourself about who we're dealing with here. Okay. If you're taking your cues from mainstream media, if I'm you, I'm probably turning it off for a while and tuning in and finding out reading what Dick has read here about the real RFK and not something that's been made up to sway your vote one way or another. But what I want to ask you, Dick, he's got the throat issue, you know, and dysphonia. Did he talk about that at all in the book? Or
yeah. Yeah, we get into it because it's
you got into it. Yeah,
well, it's spasmodic dysphonia. It's a very rare illness, and nobody really knows. You know, there's no cure for it, but I think he's gotten better with various things from alternative medicine. But he lives with it, you know, and he hates it. He hates the way his voice sounds, but it's gotten better over the years, I kind of think. I don't know. I was thinking about it today that maybe in a sense it was one of those things that had to happen to him because, it forced him to a deeper level inside and, you know, not to run for office when he could have years ago. And here he is, you know, I think he's quite, I don't know if happy is the word, but he's very pleased to be in a position where he can finally work to help implement some of these public health policies that he's been fighting for, you know, for many, many years now. And now he can get out there and fire some people if he feels that they're not doing their job and work closely with those that he feels are.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm glad to hear that he's got some alternatives that's working for him. And that's awesome. Yeah. I have a feeling that he's going to get a lot better with that over the next few months. Actually, that's just my hit. I don't know.
I think so too.
Could happen. Yeah. All right. So you know, we're almost out of time here, Dick. What do you want people to know about the book? What do you want? Like, what is the benefit when the audience reads that book? What is the benefit to them? What do you want them to know?
Well, they're going to get a clear picture of him, which is not entirely, you know, it's not a, he didn't want to leave out the tough things he's been through. I mean, they're all in the book, the addiction and the ostracism by his family and so on. But people will get a real picture of all the different things that he's accomplished as an environmental activist and now in the health world that he's trying to do and why there's been so much opposition to him. So I'm hoping that that's what it does. And I the one thing I want to do, I think maybe here at the end, there's a speech he gave that I quote from in the prologue to the book. And if I have time,
go ahead. We got time. Yeah.
Okay. This was at a national conference, the first one that his organization, Children's Health Defense, he's no longer running it, but he helped set it up and they're still going. And he said, I watched the earth become biologically impoverished. The world my kids are growing up in, 80% of the insects and 85% of the songbirds that I knew are gone. This year, all the snow crabs in the Bering Sea. In the environmental movement, every victory is temporary and every defeat is permanent. If a species or a landscape is destroyed, you're never getting it back. And with us, the same is true. If you lose a child, things are never going to be the same. So he said, we are all foot soldiers in an apocalyptic battle against the forces of ignorance and greed and totalitarianism. And it's really important to maintain your spiritual center if you're going to be an effective warrior. We're not going to win this by beating them with force of arms, but from our integrity, our compassion, our kindness, and our humanity.
That's beautiful. I have one last question for you, Dick. Who have you become as a result of knowing RFK Jr., Bobby? How has he changed you?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of friends who can't stand him. Feel like he's. They believe the media. They are. We've had, you know, difficult moments in our friendships over that. So I think I've been forced to, to take a stand myself. You know, to speak up for. He's not a perfect person, nor am I or any of us. You know, he's got his problems. He's had his devils over the years, but you know, he's worked hard to. I don't know if you ever overcome them, but you live with them and you realize what they're doing to you and you seek to do something different. And I really feel he's the guy who is fighting very hard for the betterment of our world and our future. And I'll stand with that. I'll stand with that against people who, friends, longtime, lifelong friends who say that you're making a big mistake here. So I guess I've had to reach for that inside and come up with it.
I love it. Yeah, that question comes up for all of us. What do we stand for? And you stand for truth, courage, and wisdom. So my hat's off to you, Dick Russell. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Ken, thanks so much for having me today. Enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you.